Next case is 04417 and 510 State of Ohio versus Eric Porterfield. Ms. Annis.
May it please the court, my name is Luane Annis, and I'm representing the appellant in this matter, the State of Ohio. We're here this morning to request that the court overturn the decision of the 11th District Court of Appeals, wherein that it found an ambiguity in Ohio Revised Code 2953.08D and allowed an appeal of a jointly recommended sentence in a capital case which was resolved with non-capital specifications. The case involved the double murder of Gary Bell and Chuck Mathey in Trumbull County, Ohio. The defendant was one of two individuals that entered a private home and opened fire in the course of a robbery on an afternoon party that was going on in the summer months and killed two visitors at the house at point blank range. Mr. Porterfield's capital jury was seated and he elected to engage in a negotiated plea agreement with the State of Ohio. Despite the fact that the 11th District Court of Appeals found that he engaged in a jointly recommended sentence with the State of Ohio, it reversed and remanded the case for sentencing because the trial court did not place on the record its reasons for imposing consecutive sentences on the aggravated murder counts. There were two aggravated murder counts to which the defendant pled, one for each of the deceased victims, as well as one charge of attempted aggravated murder. And the defendant also pled to that and received consecutive sentences as a result for an aggregate term of 53 years, which was specifically spelled out in the plea agreement, signed by the defendant. The defendant approached the bench. There was no objection placed on the record to the sentence imposed. The defendant not only jointly recommended the sentence, the plea agreement in black and white spells out all of the requirements that the trial court must find, the findings as far as the fact that this was the worst form of the offense, that the sentence that was to be imposed was not disproportionate to others in similar circumstances, on and on down the line. These were spelled out word for word in the plea agreement. They were read back by the judge to the defendant during the plea colloquy and sentencing. And is part of the record in this case that Eric Porterfield agreed to it all. Nevertheless, the 11th District Court of Appeals found that this sentence, which he agreed to, was appealable. And here we are today.
Excuse me, counsel. Now, you're saying that the findings that are required for consecutive sentences were in the plea agreement itself?
Absolutely in the plea agreement, Your Honor, and absolutely in the record read from His Honor, Judge.
Then why did the 11th District find a problem with that?
The 11th District, which, by the way, conceded that this was a jointly recommended sentence, felt that there was an ambiguity in the statute 2953.08D. Now, the problem with this is the 11th District is finding the so-called ambiguity in the section. Well, what I just read to you was not a section. It's a division or a subsection. And the 11th District Court of Appeals, to my knowledge, is the only district in this state that has come up with this particular holding, that this is ambiguous, that it's not clear, and that somehow we are now going to review aggravated murder and murder sentences when the statute specifically says we are not to review them.
And the General Assembly seems to know the distinction between a division and a section because they say it in A of 08. which defeats the Court of Appeals argument, seems to me.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I absolutely agree. And, you know, the easy thing for Trumbull County to do in this case would have been to say, fine, we'll just bring Eric Porterfield back in and sentence him. But we feel this is an important issue. We wanted to bring it before the court for consideration because we feel that when a defendant makes a stipulation, and this goes to my second proposition of law, a stipulation is a stipulation is a stipulation. Why should the court be required to put reasons in the record when it is very clear that the defendant has already agreed to the fact that those reasons exist and the fact that consecutive sentences are appropriate in this particular case? And I have to admit that it was sort of hard for me to find case law that says a stipulation is a stipulation. I did find a particular section in Ohio jurisprudence which says that if the judge doesn't make some findings contrary to what the stipulation is, that stipulation sticks. And in this case, for whatever reason, the 11th District Court of Appeals felt that it did not. And we are here actually as a policy matter of judicial economy, because we do not want to see the 11th District open the floodgates for other people to come in and start appealing what is clearly a jointly recommended sentence in the process of a remand like we have here with Porterfield, defendants coming in and trying to withdraw pleas. And as this court is well aware, prior to sentence, the defendant should be allowed to withdraw a plea liberally. And we feel that this could be problematic in other cases throughout the state when, in fact, the defendant's wishes were not only very clear, but very honored by the court. The court imposed the sentence as specifically requested by Eric Porterfield. And
I wanted to make sure I understood. You made a statement before. Is the court required to accept the stipulation? What if the court believes the stipulation? Okay.
I don't believe that the court is, and at least certainly not by 2953.08d. What a jointly recommended sentence is just that, is both sides agreeing to recommend to the court a specific sentence. But certainly, I've seen no case law that indicates that the court is required to follow it. I think that's one of the few areas of judicial discretion there is left at this point. And I did argue that to the 11th District Court just this past week, is it's one of the few areas left in that, no, the court doesn't necessarily have to agree. But when the court does agree, I think, Your Honor, that makes it all the more evident as to what we have here. The defendant got what he bargained for, he got what he asked for, and now we're suddenly before the 11th District Court. This was coattailed on a motion to withdraw a plea after he'd been sent to prison. He decides he's going to challenge the whole plea colloquy and the validity of the plea. There were five other propositions of law, or I should say assignments of error, in the lower court that were completely overruled, that his colloquy was compliant with Criminal Rule 11C, that he made a voluntary, knowing, and willing understanding of his rights and waived them all. No problem with the rest of this plea, except this sentence, which was in the plea, which he asked for and which he agreed to.
Well, and your strongest point is that the plea agreement gave the reasons for consecutive sentencing. And so that the judge adopts the plea agreement, he or she therefore adopts those, complies with the statute, essentially, the purpose of the statute.
I think complies with, yes, Your Honor, and you use the word reason. And if I could make a distinction, if I understand the Comer case, there has been a distinction between what the findings are, which were, you know, spelled out very clearly in the plea agreement, and apparently now Comer says that there are to be reasons for these findings. Well, if the defendant is already stipulating to what those findings are, he's stipulating that the reasons exist. And I don't mean to push the envelope on the Comer case, but I would like to point out this. In a plea situation, you have a situation wherein you don't necessarily know what all the facts of the case are. But in Ohio, we're not even required as prosecutors to give a findings of fact, or excuse me, a factual basis. This was done in some detail in this particular case, but we're not required to do so. And by the decision of Comer, when you start applying that to plea arrangements, you're asking the judge to find reasons when maybe he or she doesn't know all of the facts of the case because it was resolved by a plea. So it's
you
something
think we need to revisit Comer? Is that what you're suggesting?
I think in terms of, first of all, with regard to stipulation, Your Honor, I think Comer should be revisited with that look in mind. If a defendant is perfectly willing to stipulate, number one, to the sentence that he's asking for, and number two, that various findings apply to him and that he deserves consecutive sentencing, or that he deserves more than the minimum, or that he deserves a maximum sentence, if that's what he is willing to stipulate to, why then go on record with more rote recitation, as it were, and define all those again? Or make independent findings beyond what was already stated and agreed to by the defendant. So, yes, let me just say the state of Ohio would not be disappointed at all if you would look at Comer again in that light, in that light with regard to stipulations.
How much did the 11th District rely on Comer as opposed to the ambiguity in the second sentence of D?
You know, what's sort of disturbing in this court, in this particular case, Your Honor, is they did rely on Comer, mm-hmm. and quite frankly, this case predates Comer. The defendant entered his plea in this matter in October of 2001. This court did not decide Comer until 2003. So, you know, the state did not even have Comer to look at back then, although I would concede the statute was in place that said give the reasons, though not in a whole lot of detail. And so you're putting the trial court, or in this particular case, the trial court's put in a situation that it's supposed to know Comer is coming down the line. That is, in effect, unfair to the trial court. But its reliance was certainly got mentioned in the opinion, but it's the opinion seemed to focus more on the statute, which said in very brief terms, give the reasons for X, Y, and Z.
If I could just make a question that's somewhat far afield. Is the state considering Comer the equivalent of the Scott Ponser case in the criminal side? Have you seen problems with Comer in other matters?
In that, because of what I just stated in terms of where perhaps a trial has not undergone a public hearing, and the judge does not hear all the evidence. And I'll cite you another area, Your Honor, and it applies in this case, where the defendant waives a PSI. You know, how is the judge supposed to know when there's a waiver of the PSI how bad this person is, how much protection from this person does the public need? In that sense, yes, the Comer can be somewhat problematic. With a trial and where a PSI is done and the judge has more facts for him or her to look at, that it is not quite so problematic. But Comer can and has caused us some problems as far as some of those areas that I just mentioned.
Thank you.
Well, counsel, I'm a little concerned. I mean, I can appreciate that when we do have a stipulation and there is a plea bargain pursuant to the stipulations and the sentencing is done according to those stipulations and that's conveyed to the judge and the judge agrees then. But you're saying that it becomes problematic and the judge should not have to repeat, for example, findings and then reasons for those findings and then proceed to sentencing. Is that not over-reliance on the word of the prosecutor that may not be properly relied upon by the sentencing judge as to what the facts are or any information there?
If anything, the way it exists currently, the prosecutor is over-relied upon as opposed to what would be stipulated to and agreed to by all parties, including the court. The court would be recognizing then what both sides have come to a conclusion. For example, that this particular defendant had already served a prior prison term. Now, maybe the defendant has served many prior prison terms, but if it's before the court that he served a prior prison term, which is what the statute says, then there is no over-reliance on a representation of the prosecutor, I don't believe. We would simply refer the court to the State versus Hollingsworth case out of the 8th District, wherein I believe there is a real good analysis regarding why the aggravated murder and murder charges are not subject to the appellate review that the other lesser felonies are. And essentially what the 8th District said was, because of the fact that there are already mandatory sentences for aggravated murder and murder, the judge really doesn't have a whole lot of discretion. And when you look at those other felonies where you're looking at a potential penalty spread of 3 to 10 years, there's a great deal of discretion involved in there, and that is why the Ohio General Assembly, as it did, required that reasons be put on the record for consecutive sentences, for maximum sentences, and for more than minimum sentences. But that discretion is practically and completely, for all practical purposes, I should say, removed from the trial court on murder and aggravated sentences. Aggravated murder and murder sentences. I don't have any other points that I'd like to make this morning. If there are no further questions, I'd like to thank the court for its time and its questions, and I'll take my seat.
Thank you, Ms. Annis.
Thank you.
Oral arguments are waived by Mr. Porterfield. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.